Hello, and welcome to the Creative Culture Podcast interview series. Today, we're delighted to be speaking to Sharita Daya, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Consultant Coach based in South Africa. Today, Sharita will share insights on her D&I journey and how inclusivity is absolutely critical to implement successful initiatives. You can find out more on our website, creativecultureint.com/insights. So welcome, Sharita, and thank you again so much for your time today. To begin with, perhaps you could tell us a little more about yourself, your career, your current role, and also about what brought you to working in leadership, diversity, and inclusion.
Hi, Marie. And so firstly, thank you for having me on the Creative Culture Podcast and for taking the time to talk to me today. And thanks for that lovely introduction. So I'm Sharita Daya, Diversity and Equity Inclusion Advisor and Coach. So I think prior to me taking on this work full time, it's worth noting that I was in corporate for quite some time, over two decades, actually. And over the years at international and South African firms, I was quite involved in DEI program design. And I also held executive mandate for chairing DEI committees globally. In many cases, I oversaw the execution of programs as well across global markets. And I think what that really gave me was quite a unique perspective as to what was working in South Africa, and a global perspective as well from a comparative base as to what was working well in South Africa and what was not, you know, in terms of my different exposure. So what drew me to the work, I think, Maureen, was, you know, as a woman of color growing up in South Africa during apartheid, and starting my career during those early democratic days of corporate South Africa, you know, DEI was a constant topic in my life, and it was a very pervasive one in my personal and professional life. So I really started getting involved in DEI efforts quite early in my career, but it was quite later in my professional life, I think, that I started to, you know, really make sense of my own experiences and of others like me. And I started to interrogate the patterns and themes which were emerging. Now, the most common pattern that I found from my lived experiences and interactions with professionals and mentoring and coaching people, you know, for well over two decades and across geographies, was that even in environments with progressive diversity and equity policies and impressive representation stats, most environments were not initially designed for everyone to belong, right? They were designed for this prototype ideal worker. And this is not really an inclusive prototype. For companies to thrive, they also need cultures of inclusion and belonging. And this is what really attracts and keeps diverse talent and creates these innovative environments that can outperform their peers. So it was really drawing on these learnings and experiences that I followed my calling to, you know, to DEI work. And in early 2020, I founded my DEI consultancy, drawing on my vast corporate experience globally and locally in South Africa, and on my own lived experience. So I now focus my efforts on creating these inclusive environments and really interrupting the barriers and biases that continue to hold us back.
Brilliant. Well, that sounds amazing. And I know you've partially answered that question already, but I'd love to better understand how being from South Africa has influenced your perception of D&I, and if there are any aspects of D&I in South Africa that you feel are universal and can be applied to a range of cultures and situations?
Yeah, sure. You know, so like I mentioned, I worked in both South African organizations and in large global organizations. So while I have that international perspective, my views are primarily informed by the South African lens. Now, I guess it's worth maybe taking a step back and talking about South Africa in the early days of when it became a democracy, and that, you know, South Africa officially became a democracy in 1994. And at that time, there was a strong focus on addressing the inequalities that were created by the apartheid system. And this was primarily addressed through the implementation of equity-focused policy and legislation. And rightfully so, right? Because discrimination and racism were previously legal under the apartheid regime, and it created vast social and economic divides in South Africa. And now, with almost 24 years of experience behind us, I think we can reflect critically and evaluate what has worked well and areas that still need some development. So our employment equity policies have certainly come a long way in addressing representation in organizations and in creating opportunities for equal participation. But we've also come to realize that diversity representation is the start, it's not the destination. And this is a universal theme I see emerging in the global context too, across cultures and geographies. What we also need to address now, in addition to policies and legislation, is how discrimination and bias presents itself in everyday interactions and within the culture of an environment. This is what I refer to as the, you know, the invisible barriers which persist and keep marginalized groups back. I think there's now really a reckoning, so to speak, that we need to move beyond the numbers to creating these cultures of inclusion and belonging where differences are valued and rewarded and where everyone can belong beyond a tick the box exercise. Thankfully, there's a lot more evidence and research available now that supports this view. There's a really great study by Harvard Business Review, amongst many other notable publications, that shows that it's not diversity alone that makes companies stand out, right? It's companies that can harness this diversity and create cultures of inclusion and belonging. And these are the companies that significantly outperform their peers.
That's brilliant. And I guess going back to what you said just now, and the fact that you've worked for such a range of organizations over the past couple of decades, have you noticed any sort of common struggles when it comes to demonstrating the value of D&I and the importance of making it a priority for businesses? And I think maybe specifically how you said that diversity was just in itself a starting point, but not the solution or the end result.
Right. So, you know, I think there's been a lot of changes over the last decade in this field, but more so in the last 2 years. In the last 2 years, if we have to look at what's been happening on a global scale, I liken it to a microwave effect, right? There has been, you know, this renewed focus on social justice and social justice advocacy. And we've seen this over the last 2 years in terms of the, you know, the focus on movements like Black Lives Matter movements and the Me Too movements and the Time's Up movement. So there's been a lot of focus now on actually, you know, asking ourselves what's working, what's not, and why do we need, you know, such a renewed focus on DEI efforts in organizations. And again, thankfully, research is now quite extensive because we have history and we have data and we can reflect on what has worked and what hasn't. So the research is telling us quite consistently that diversity is important, but it's not enough and it's just the start. And we need to now create these environments of inclusion. And it's these environments that can outperform their peers and they can adapt and they can innovate. Catalyst, I'm not sure if you were, Catalyst is a global NGO that's dedicated to DEI work, has also released quite important findings in this regard. So the empirical evidence is really showing us that there's this tangible relationship between inclusive and diverse workplaces and bottom line. Now, the pandemic, I think, has also really been shining a spotlight as to why inclusion, belonging, and having these, you know, healthy workplaces is so important, because we've seen that it's the companies that can't adapt in this very volatile and uncertain world that we operate in are really battling to survive. And over the last couple of years, we're also seeing highly publicized cases of companies that don't get DEI right and the effect that this has on bottom line. And, you know, a couple come to mind. You know, there was a case of H&M a couple of years ago, Starbucks about 2 years ago. Here in South Africa, we had a very publicized case, the retail and pharmaceutical group that involved a Unilever product. And we've seen how these companies now responding well by making DEI a strategic priority. And why I mention that is that I think that companies are realizing that it's important. They're realizing that it's a strategic priority and it hurts bottom line if you don't get it right. But what I'm still seeing in terms of struggles is in the implementation. So there's an awareness that it's important, but companies are still battling with how to implement effectively. And there's two things that are coming across and that come to mind for me that I'm seeing as constant themes. The first is that there's still a misperception that diversity and inclusion is the same thing, and it's not, right? It's all well and good to have impressive diversity representation numbers, but if you have diversity alone and you don't have an environment of inclusion that can harness this diverse workforce effectively, then companies just can't retain talent, they can't attract new diverse talent, they can't innovate and thrive. So diversity, you know, I usually say diversity is a fact, right? And it can be addressed through hiring and policy changes, whereas inclusion and belonging require a longer term commitment to cultural transformation. And I think this is where companies nearly need to make a mindset shift that DEI work is not, it's not an event, right? It is a long term process that they need to commit to. And the second theme I'm seeing with implementation coming across more and more is companies need to treat DEI as a strategic priority. And with like with any strategic priority, it needs resources, it needs budget, it needs authority, it needs accountability. It's not the job of a select few to be responsible for DEI, right? I think it's we see this in organizations where it's very tempting to say, oh, we've hired a DEI person and this person is going to just solve for everything. It's not the job of a person. It is a wide-reaching strategic priority and everyone needs to commit to this and leaders need to be held accountable. So I think those are, you know, the two big themes that I see coming out. It's not so much the awareness. Yes, there are some companies that are still battling with, is this important or not? But the vast majority realize that DEI is important. I see the struggles now more in the execution.
I completely agree with you there. And I think going back to that point exactly, how do you feel companies can move on from that awareness stage in order to implement actionable processes in a way that truly demystifies inclusion and makes it a lot more practical? And in other words, how can companies be intentionally inclusive every day?
I love that question. I'm so glad you asked that because, you know, a lot of my efforts is focused on demystifying what it means to be inclusive every day in very simple and practical ways, right? And having, you know, worked in so many organizations and coached and mentored and interviewed countless people, the common theme I see coming out is that people really want to do better, but they lack these practical everyday skills. And inclusion is seen as this big, hairy, big, evasive goal. But in reality, an inclusive culture is created in everyday micro actions, right? And these are born from daily interactions. So I often say to leaders, this is where you can start. You can start on these daily interactions and you can start making inclusion very intentional. So practically, inclusive behaviors can most easily be built into everyday language and everyday actions. And the most effective, easiest place, so to speak, to do it is in meeting etiquette, right? Because we have meetings every day, be it informal meetings in the corridor, be it structured big meetings. And these are great opportunities for organizations to start building inclusive behaviors. So some examples I've seen that make a huge impact are things like removing exclusionary and stereotype language from the workplace. Now, what comes to mind is an organization I worked with a few years back, and we ran focus groups to understand the impact of language in creating inclusive environments. And through the focus groups, we called out the use of the word aggressive when describing women's styles in performance evaluations. And this actually resulted in the organization taking this on board and said, well, how can we actually be intentional about this now? How can we remove the stereotyped and exclusionary language from our daily interactions? And they launched a program where they offer daily postcards, so little snippets, little postcards, which they send out to all their staff every day over a 2-month period. And they called out the use of these gendered stereotyped language and explained why it was limiting. And then they offered an alternative word instead to use. So for example, replacing the word aggressive with assertive, replacing the word emotional with passionate. And these subtle changes in language started making people more aware of how bias creeps into everyday language, and it had a massive impact on culture. Another example that comes to mind where I've been personally involved in this program with a large global firm was a new employee buddy system. And what we had done there was we matched new hires with employees from diverse backgrounds for about a 3 to 6 month period, depending. And this was not only diversity match in terms of age and race, ethnicity, language, but also people from different departments with different skill sets. So there was cognitive diversity as well. And the buddy system was less about the job to be done, but it was more about introducing the new hires to the informal and social networks in the workplace. And it's those networks that are often overlooked in onboarding, right? But these can have a bigger impact in how people experience the workplace. And what this program really encouraged people to do was to learn more about others from different backgrounds and diverse groups. And it helped create this more inclusive, welcoming space for new hires. And the third, I think I'd leave you with, that really stood out for me was, you know, an area that I focus a lot on with companies, particularly large global organizations, is how to hold inclusive meetings. And I think I mentioned this earlier, is that, you know, we're having meetings all the time, every day, be it formal or informal, be it in the corridor. And these are great opportunities now to actually practice inclusionary behavior. So a small action that, you know, we introduced in a global organization where we were working with remote groups and people from different cultures, different languages, was just implement a simple system of turn-taking in the meetings, right? It sounds simple, but it was so effective. And all this did was there was a few minutes towards the end of the meeting where there was a turn-taking system to ensure that all voices are heard and no one feels left out. And in many cultures, language is quite a barrier. So in this case, you know, I suggest these simple actions, which is just send meeting notes beforehand. And it gives people the time to read through the notes in their language or to translate it and write notes, and then allow time for people to send comments through after a meeting. Now, in these types of diverse backgrounds and across, you know, language barriers and differences, it plays a huge impact on how people feel included and how they can contribute. So I encourage employees to really take this into account and also to apply what we call the no interrupt rule. And this is a simple thing. It's when you're talking to people whose first language is different from yours, just let them finish speaking before you interrupt them, right? And it sounds really simple. And when I talk to companies about implementing this in the daily workplace, there's these moments where, you know, leaders and employees go, aha, that's so simple. And I go, aha, it is. Because inclusion is about those simple things. We don't have to wait to be inclusive, right? We don't have to wait for some event to happen. We can be intentionally inclusive every day by just thinking about our impact and doing small things. And if we keep doing those things over time, the repetitive behavior becomes habit. And when it becomes habit, it becomes part of your culture. I've personally seen this firsthand in organizations where they are so intentional about this and leaders start to role model these inclusive behaviors, you know, what it means to be inclusive, calling out behavior that's not inclusive and calling out bias in the moment as it happens has a huge impact and sets the tone for the culture of the entire organization.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of these ideas and tips on how to really make the workplace inclusive every day. I think it's really important to understand that it doesn't always have to come from the leaders, in that every employee has a role to play and can really contribute in this process. And as a last question, I was wondering if you had any examples of successful organizations or initiatives that have been implemented on the D&I front.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a couple that come to mind. And, you know, I think these organizations that we can look to who have been through their own struggles, right, and have learned through them. And Starbucks comes to mind. I think I mentioned them earlier that, you know, some years back, about 2 years back, they had their own struggles with the implementation of DEI policies across all of their retail outlets. So in late 2020, you know, they made an announcement that they'd be linking executives' pay to the success of inclusion initiatives in addition to diversity initiatives, and that they would also broaden the scope of mentorship programs by linking underrepresented employees to senior leaders. And what this really did, Maureen, is that it sent a very clear signal that DEI is a strategic business priority because it placed the DEI agenda more firmly onto the scorecards of senior leaders. And earlier on, we spoke about some of the struggles in companies with implementing DEI, and prioritizing DEI as a strategic priority is one of those things that, you know, come out. So the way that Starbucks has been doing it, I think it's a really great example because they've sent this clear signal into the organization. I've also seen companies that prioritize inclusive policies. So Spotify, for example, lets employees take religious holidays that are important to them rather than enforcing a blanket approach. I've seen companies that implement inclusionary practices into recruitment. So name-blind CVs is becoming more and more popular as an inclusive recruitment strategy, and also asking candidates what environment suits them best for interviews. So, you know, there's a tendency to invite, you know, potential new recruits for interviews at the place of work of the company, whereas now there's more of a movement to say, well, actually, what suits you? Because we're working in the workplace looks very different today. It's not a traditional workplace. And there are many other factors to consider when you're interviewing as to how, you know, people feel comfortable, where they're more relaxed, et cetera. So I think companies is now starting to open up the field into what works for people, how can we be more inclusionary. Companies like Salesforce and Accenture, where I worked at Accenture for many years, they report their DEI progress across multiple metrics, not just on diverse representation hiring numbers, but they also consider intersectional groups, they consider attrition rates, promotion rates, and they regularly undertake focus group surveys to understand how employees are experiencing the workplace and that no one is being unintentionally excluded. And I think these companies, and I call out Salesforce and Accenture specifically, because they really understand as well the importance of actively advocating for underrepresented groups through sponsorship programs. Now, mentoring is useful, but I think we're also kind of progressing from mentoring as well into sponsorships. Because while mentoring is useful, it's really sponsorships that are helping turn the dial for members of underrepresented or marginalized groups. And in summary, I think it's really the companies that they're prioritizing inclusive cultural transformation and who treat DEI as a strategic priority in every aspect of their business that stand out for me.
Thank you again for sharing these examples. I think they will definitely be very useful to all of our listeners. So thank you so much for your time again today, Sharita. It's truly been a pleasure. And for everybody else, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy this episode, and you can find more podcast episodes by visiting our website, creativecultureint.com, under our Insights section. Make culture work for you.